Welcome to Multifamily AP 360, the show where we discuss 360-degree views on mindset, passive, and active multifamily investment. If you're looking for tips and strategies, or just want to learn from the experiences of others, both good and bad, then listen on. This is Multifamily AP 360 with your host, Ramakrishna Chinchu.
Welcome to another episode of Multifamily AP 360. And today's our guest is Brad Baldridge from Taming the High Cost of College. With that, welcome, Brad.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. And a little bit about Brad. He's one of the nation's leading college financial planning experts. Brad teaches families the best ways to plan, save, and pay for college so they can make their children's college dreams come true without wiping out their finances or their retirement. For over 20 years, he has shared his expertise and insights through his private practice as a presenter at numerous workshops and seminars and as a blogger and host of the Taming the High Cost of College podcast. Today, Brad is joining us to talk about how to plan and save for college with smart and effective strategies, and he will answer some key questions that may families have about the college process. Brad, thanks for being with us today and welcome to the show. So with that, Brad, you want to add anything to your bio?
I don't think so. I think that covers it.
Awesome. Thank you very much. So my podcast is mainly focusing on real estate and multifamily. So what about families that own rental real estate? How does that impact college finances? Even before going to that, you know, you can, you know, share a little bit more about your plan and, you know, more details.
Yeah. So when you own rental real estate, there's some additional challenges because you have assets now that will have an impact on need-based aid. You also have cash flow, you know, where you may have a higher income, or, and again, a lot of cases you might have high income, but it's just shows up on taxes. You don't actually get to spend it. So sometimes we see that in with business owners and rental property where there's a high income on the taxes because of a transfer or something, and it has a big impact on aid, but you don't even have the money to spend it. So I think that's the challenge with rental real estate. On top of that, you know, when you have whatever you have going on as far as paying for college, there's stuff that everybody needs to do. So you need to visit schools and you need to figure out financial aid and you need to decide if you're going to save, invest, and decide who's going to pay and all those pieces. But then in addition to that, if you own a business or rental real estate, you've got extra things that you can do as far as planning, because theoretically you have more control over your income, as an example. And if you can adjust your income, it may make sense to do that depending on where you stand in the financial aid and that type of thing. And then of course you also have to list your assets and understand how all that works. So when you have rental real estate or own a business, you have to do what everybody else does plus more. Again, but then there's also opportunities. So as an example, families can hire the kids into the business or have the students help with the rental real estate. And then if you pay them to do the work that they're doing, you know, that's deductible to you. So it reduces your income. It obviously is taxable to the student now. So the student may have to pay taxes on it. But a lot of times students don't pay a lot of taxes. So I've seen situations where families hire the kids to go mow the lawn at the property, or they're part of the cleanup crew. So whenever they have a move out, you know, the kids come along and they help do the cleaning and all that type of thing. And, you know, part of it is, hey, they're part of the family, they need to participate. But the other benefit, of course, is by paying the students, you know, they have income, they have the ability to put money into retirement and other things. And they have the opportunity to do more planning around taxes and financial aid.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. So are there any real estate strategies people can use to help pay for college?
You certainly can look at things like owning real estate and having your student manage that real estate. So a common real estate strategy is once you have experience with real estate. I don't recommend this for families where you've not done a lot of real estate in the past, because it's a tough way to learn. But I've had families where they buy a property near the school that their students are attending. And when the students are living off campus, they live in that building and they manage it. They have a couple of roommates that they charge rent to. And in the end, right, you make money through real estate, plus you pay the student well. And it's just an opportunity as long as the student is in that area. You know, the downside is you're renting to students. And if you've never done that before, that can be a interesting challenge in that, you know, a lot of students don't have a very strong credit rating. They don't understand how to manage real estate. You know, they might have parties or other things that are pretty damaging and that type of thing. So, you know, when you're doing this, if you need to kind of pay attention and learn about what it's like to have students. And as an example, a lot of landlords, instead of renting to the student, will rent to the parents. And then the parents kind of sublease to the student or however they want to do it. But the parents are on the lease. That way, when there is a party and things get damaged, instead of trying to chase a student for the damage, you can chase the parents. And again, students don't have any money. They don't have any income. You don't really want to be chasing students to repay. Whereas most parents, you know, if you vet them well, the parents certainly would have a credit rating that they'd want to protect. They'd have assets and income and that type of thing. So you're more likely to, you know, recoup any sort of damage as well. And then, of course, there's strategies around, you know, sometimes you don't do the undergrad. You work with the grad students that are at that university or, you know, the medical schools and stuff like that, where you have a higher caliber, again, of renter that's less likely to be a problem in the long run.
Yeah, got it. And thank you for sharing some best practices around, you know, managing real estate and also, you know, saving or paying for college. So how much should we be saving for college?
Well, that's a challenging question. I mean, realistically, a couple hundred a month, maybe a little bit more from the time the student is born until, you know, they're off to college. Now, if you did that and said, you know, some families would be like, well, $200 a month times three kids, that's $600 a month. That's pretty steep. And I'm going to do that for 18 years. You know, most of us didn't do that from the time the student was born. And of course, college got a lot more expensive. To be fair, you know, 20 years ago or 15 years ago, when we were having kids, we didn't really understand how quickly and how expensive college was going to get. And had we known, we might have done things differently. But again, in some situations, it makes sense to start saving. And then I do a lot of work with what I would call late stage college planning, where you've got a high school sophomore, right? And college is just 2 or 3 years away. You still can save, and you probably should save, you know, because the reality is for in a lot of these situations, college, you're going to need $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month to make college work. And oftentimes parents' income has climbed, and now, you know, either the rents are starting to climb and they're actually starting to net some positive cash flow from the real estate they're working with, or maybe they've got some promotions in their job or whatever it is. So they have the cash flow. And now, but a lot of times they hear things like, well, it's too late to put money into college savings. And it's like, well, it's never too late. It would have been better had you done it when you had a two-year-old. That's true. But that ship has sailed. There's nothing we can do about that. But if you can start saving, you know, just a couple of years, you know, that's the reality for most families is, let's say you have two kids that are 2 years apart. So you'll have 2 years with one in school, 2 years with both in school, and 2 years with the last one in school. So you have 6 years of high college expenses. Most families can't just write the check during those 6 years. They're going to have to save ahead of time so that they have some funds. And then some families may also have to borrow a little or somehow, you know, do something creative there and then pay that back after college is over. Because most families are going to take those 6 years and spread it out over 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. Again, depending on how early you start saving and how big the loans are and how long it takes to pay them back.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. So where is the best place to put your money to save for college?
Well, that's a challenging question. That's like, what is the best real estate type of real estate to own? Well, there is no best. There's just different pros and cons, right? So you get tax breaks with some of the specific college savings plans you get perhaps. And then you can also look at just saving it in general. A lot of real estate professionals have the idea of, well, I'm going to buy this property now when the kids are 5 and 7, and hopefully by the time they're off to college, it'll be paid off. And then we'll have good cash flow and we'll pay for college with that cash flow, or we'll sell the property, get a big lump sum, and use that to pay for college. You know, those strategies work as well. The challenge is they could have a pretty big impact on need-based aid. So depending on where you stand as far as need-based aid is concerned, and again, a lot of successful real estate people are never going to get need-based aid, so you don't really care that it messes up need-based aid because you're never going to get it anyway because your income is already too high or whatever it might be. But in some situations, it's like, well, if I sell the property, that'll show up in my taxes and that'll impact my need-based aid. So now I change my mind. I don't really want to sell it. You know, so then you could kind of go to a plan B potentially if it makes more sense.
So what other tax strategies we can use to help with college planning?
Right. So again, working with the savings, there are tax breaks for college itself. If you have a student and you pay up to $4,000 towards tuition or other qualified expenses, then you get a $2,500 credit on your taxes, which, you know, and a credit is better than a deduction. A credit means your, you know, your refund goes up by $2,500 or your tax bill goes down by $2,500 just for that $4,000 payment. Now, the challenge is it phases out for married families between 160 and 180 AGI, or your income, your adjusted gross income. So some families that, you know, I've seen a lot of situations where families are right on the edge, right, where their income is 180, 185, something like that, where they're just phased out of that benefit. So in some cases, it makes sense to adjust their income a little bit, shift things around, and then, you know, get below the 160 so that we can take the credit. You know, a lot of times if by doing that, you save some on taxes, you also get the credit. And then sometimes what happens is you shift things, you know, put money into a retirement plan or do other things like that to make it come down. And then later on, you can switch it back and kind of recoup what it is that you did for the years when you had the tax break. So it's important, you know, the 4 years you have kids in college, that's when you want to stay under 160. And then the couple of years before or the couple of years after, you might have to go to 180 or 200 in order to make that work in the middle. But a lot of times, again, shifting that around makes a lot of sense for some families.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. Is the 529 plan the best way to save for college?
No, it's not the best. It's just one of the choices. I mean, it's a popular one and there's a lot of tax breaks. There's other opportunities where you could save with a Roth IRA or other things. And again, sometimes for families, it just you're better off paying down expensive debt or doing other things so that you have the cash flow when you get there. I think the most important thing for families is to understand that college is expensive and is a much bigger piece of the family budget than it used to be. And you just have to budget it in somehow, whether it's, you know, again, going to sell some real estate when we get there, we're going to have better cash flow when we get there. Or yes, you could save in a 529. You know, the advantages to a 529 are the tax benefits. Some states offer benefits to their residents on the state income taxes. So as an example, here in Wisconsin, you can have a tax deduction for contributing if you pay taxes in Wisconsin. And many other states have benefits, but a lot of big states don't. You know, Florida doesn't have any income taxes, so they don't have any income tax benefits. Texas is similar. California has a lot of taxes, but they just don't offer benefits. So it depends on the state and, you know, what they offer. And sometimes it makes sense to look at a plan that's outside of your state. So you can live in Wisconsin, use the California plan or the Texas plan, or and then spend the money at a college that's in Florida or any state, you know, so that you're not required to use any particular state or go to any particular school. But sometimes if you do things the right way, you'll get additional benefits in some states. Where parents get concerned often is, well, if I save all this money and now I have, you know, a big pile of money saved for college, then my students don't go, or my students get a whole bunch of scholarships, then what do I do with the money? So there are solutions to that. You can shift the money from one student to another. So you could shift it from your older student to your younger students, or from your younger students to your older student as needed. You could also shift it, save it for grandkids. You can spend it on grad school. You can spend it on 4-year college. You can spend it on 2-year college. You can spend it on community college. So all those things are legitimate ways to spend it. And then if you still have leftovers, you're allowed to take out up to the amount of scholarships without having to pay any penalties. You'll still have to pay taxes on that. And then there's recently been some rules where after 15 years, you're allowed to shift that from 529 for college into a Roth IRA for the student. And there's a lot of rules, so you have to make sure you understand all the ins and outs. But there's quite a lot of safety valves where you can avoid the taxes and penalties if you just plan well and pay attention. But yes, you don't want to have way more money than you need. So again, unless you're saying, well, if we don't use it for my kids, we'll use it for the grandkids. And if they don't use it, we'll use it for the great grandkid, right? If you want to set up that kind of family dynamic where there's just this big pile that's multi-generational, that certainly can work for that. But for many parents, it's how do we get to the reasonable, you know, try and match what we need reasonably, not have way too much, not have way too little. And, you know, it's kind of a process where, let's say you've got 2 or 3 kids and the oldest is now done and you're 2 more to go. And you can kind of look at it and say, well, I estimate, you know, based on knowing where the kids are going now, they're already in college. We know what the price is. We project ahead and we've got $100,000 of expenses still coming. Well, if you already have $100,000 in your 529, well, then you probably don't want to contribute anymore. But if you only have $10,000 in your 529, you could say, well, obviously we don't have enough yet. We're going to have to keep going. So you just do that every couple of years along the way and just monitor it, make sure things line up as things happen.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. When is it too late to start saving with the 529 plan?
After the kids graduate from college, but otherwise it's almost never too late, right? So you can save for a freshman in college and spend it on their sophomore or junior year. Sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it doesn't. And again, but the earlier the better, right? So again, if you've got younger kids, especially some states now are offering some benefits that say something like, well, if you open a 529, we'll give you a matching contribution. And it's not a lot of money, but it is free money. So it's like, well, if you put in $1,000, we'll put in $50 or something. Or when the kid is born, we'll start a program for you if you just sign up here. So, you know, again, paying attention to what is available in your state makes a lot of sense. A lot of states are saying it's, you know, it works out better for us if we get people started by giving them $50 or $100 or whatever it is, than having to help them when they get to college, you know, 18 years later. So they're trying to, you know, they're testing out ideas around providing some starter bonuses for families to get started early, as an example.
Yeah. Thank you. So is there any drawbacks with 529 plan, like from withdrawing money or anything?
The biggest one, of course, is if you don't spend the money on college, then you're going to have to pay taxes and penalties. And then it would have most likely been better off had you put it somewhere else. Again, there's ways to work around that. But then the other challenge, I think, is for some families, you can't get to the types of investments maybe you'd like. A typical 529 is kind of like a 401k where you have a menu of choices from, you know, aggressive stock funds, medium aggressive accounts, and then some guaranteed accounts like bank CDs or other accounts that just pay a set interest rate, and they don't pay a lot, but they pay. With interest rates coming up, they're starting to pay better. And you can choose from among those. But then someone says, well, I want to put my 529 in real estate. Well, unless there's a real estate fund in the 529, you just can't do it. Or, you know, I want to put it in my own real estate, or I want to buy art, or I want to, you know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff you just can't do. It's, you know, for people that want to be more creative, then maybe you need to invest outside of 529 so that you can do things differently.
Yeah, got it. So is there anything else we need to, like, listeners need to be aware of, you know, either savings for college or 529 plans, you know?
I think another big challenge is, you know, when do you start, right? So there's what we would call early stage planning and late stage planning. So early stage planning is when you have, you know, a grade schooler or newborn or whatever it might be, but college is a long ways away. You're not going to visit colleges. You're not going to try and figure out majors and all that kind of stuff. The kids are too young. And then late stages, once the kids are in high school, where, okay, now we're pretty sure college is going to happen, right? they're doing well in high school, they're getting good grades, they're talking about being a teacher or an engineer or something. And it's like, well, if they're going to do those kind of careers, they're going to have to get a degree. And so we know college is coming.
That's the end of this episode of Multifamily AP 360, but we'd love to continue to help you on your journey. Head to ushacapital.com/podcast to join our email list for more tips and strategies. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. This is Multifamily AP 360 with Ramakrishna Chunchu. We'll see you next time.